This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Cleared out to the line. Kept in by Chychrun. Down low. Hellebuck to save. As Stefan looked backside and then tried to jam it, but the Winnipeg Jets will pick up win number 32. Connor Hellebuck will pick up another win on the season. That is win number 28 for him. And the Jets hang on for a 4-3 win.
The Jets' victory last night by a 4-3 margin over the Arizona Coyotes at Bell MTS Place. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. We hope you enjoyed the Moose broadcast with Steve Schuster earlier this evening. The Moose, of course, falling in Grand Rapids. It's rare that you say the Moose lose on the road, and especially don't even earn a point on the road, but such was their fate tonight in Grand Rapids, the Moose losing by a 4-2 margin, but it was a 4-3 victory last night for your hometown Winnipeg Jets. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg. We're here with you for the next 2 hours. We'll talk about the Jets. We'll look around the NHL as well. A very busy Wednesday evening, at least newsworthy Wednesday evening for you, if not busy on the ice, as Wednesday is usually the quietest night on the NHL schedule. Ezzy, it was not a pretty effort last night between the Jets and the Coyotes. Anybody that paid full price for that game is probably wondering why they did so, because the Coyotes are awful, and the Jets were marginally better than the Coyotes were last night, and fortunately for the Jets, marginally better than the Coyotes is usually good enough to equal a victory and 2 points in the standings. But as Paul Maurice said post-game, that game certainly wasn't going to be sent out in any sort of DVD to the season ticket holders next year to try and get them to renew their Jets season tickets. It was an ugly affair at the rink, but a beautiful affair in the standings as the Jets get the all-important 2 points.
Yeah, 99% of Jets fans, 99% of fans at Bell MTS Place. I'm going to switch mics here for a second.
You're not on the right. There you go. Now you got the right mic. Now we can hear you, right?
99% of Jets fans, 99%, I can't even get this
out. Are
you
going to be okay?
That threw me off with the mic there.
You were using the wrong mic. Your speaker on your computer has still got the volume on.
I'm good to go here.
Now you're good to go.
99%.
Okay. I offered you some sugar earlier, and you said you didn't need it. I think you may have regretted not taking me up on that.
99% of the fans at that game yesterday were Jets fans. I think I saw a couple of Coyotes jerseys, and that was it. But, you know, I mean, the couple of goals that Connor Hellebuck let in early on in the game, I mean, they weren't very good goals. Kevin Connaughton's goal just barely squeaks in past the goal line. Mm-hmm. And same thing goes for Christian Dvorak's goal. I mean, Connor Hellebuck would tell you as such, you know, that he should have stopped that shot. So as far as I was concerned, Drew, the Coyotes really had no business being in this game, you know, especially, you know, late in that game trying to tie up the game. And, you know, the Jets, by any metric, I mean, they were completely dominating possession. Midway through the game, the Coyotes, I think, only had 8 shots on net. So, I mean, give the Coyotes credit, you know, for grinding out, you know, a one-goal loss. But, I mean, I think the Jets knew exactly who they were playing last night. And, you know, what I liked is, you know, the Jets always seemed to have a response. When they were scored on, you know, they scored shortly after, including Dustin Byfuglien's goal in the first period, which looked like, you know, it might be called back on the high stick, but it was obviously clearly under the bar. So, you know, it was a lot closer than you would like. But considering that the Jets had 7 regulars out of the lineup, I thought they played pretty well. And they battled, you know, through those ugly goals early on in the game. And, you know, Dmitry Kulikov, kind of the unlikely game-winning hero, you know, scores in the third period on a really nice shot.
Yeah, and nice pass by Kyle Connor to set up the shot.
Right, and Kyle Connor, you know, didn't play that much last night, and he's been kind of buried there on the fourth line, and, you know, we expected him, you know, to not necessarily be there at this point in the season, but because you have other players who have emerged, namely Jack Roslovic, who obviously scores the game's first goal, he's been up on that top line with Blake Wheeler and Patrick Laine. we don't expect Kyle Connor to stay there. I mean, it could be a situation where you have him moved up as soon as this weekend. But for the most part, I mean, you know, the Jets played a decent game. I wouldn't say, you know, the Jets played a bad game. I wouldn't say that they played a great game either. But, you know, the most important thing, Drew, as you mentioned, is that they get the win. They're first in the Central for now. And, you know, they're going to get some bodies back, namely Mark Scheifele on Friday. So I agree. I mean, it was an ugly win. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if Connor Hellebuyck doesn't let, you know, a couple of bad goals in, for me, this game would have been over much earlier.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, the only reason the Coyotes were in the game is that Connor Hellebuyck had a bad night.
Yeah, and he's allowed to have a bad night every once in a while.
I mean, I'm trying to think, the last bad night that you can really describe Connor Hellebuyck having, is it going back to that loss in Detroit when they had that road trip, Detroit and then Florida and then Tampa Bay? I mean, going back into, was that December? I mean, he's been so good for the Jets all year that he is allowed to have an off night. And the difference is, in years past, when the Jets goaltender would have an off night, it would end the team's chances of winning the game. Instead, the Jets were, I mean, they were playing such a poor opponent that they were able to persevere through Connor Hellebuyck's disappointing performance. And he was better in the third period where it mattered. You know, after the Coyotes made it a one-goal game, he, you know, made some decent saves as the Coyotes were pushing to try and tie the game, especially on that late power play when Nick Petan took another penalty. And he almost got caught cheating right at the end of the game with Derek Stepan trying to, you know, shoot it on net from the corner. But he was able to sort of bounce back or stand his ground and make a bit of an awkward save right before the buzzer. But like I said, for the Jets fans, they don't really care. They get the 2 points. They're not all going to be Picassos, and that certainly wasn't last night. But the point is, you get the 2 points and you get some offense from unlikely players, you know, namely Dmitry Kulikov. Nick Petan scores for the Jets. I mean, Byfuglien had a very good game, I thought, on his 800th career game in the NHL with the goal and the assist. And then, of course, Jack Roslovic demonstrated. I mean, that's a first-round draft pick, top six talent shot that he rifled over Antti Raanta 30 seconds into the game.
Well, it was also completely wide open.
Well, I mean,
the Coyotes were nowhere to be seen. And, you know, for me, watching this Coyotes team, I mean, you mentioned the power play. You know, Christian Dvorak, you know, gets his goal on the power play there. But, I mean, as far as I was concerned, especially in the third period when the Coyotes went on the power play, I mean, that was not a power play that is going to strike fear into many teams around the National Hockey League. And for me, it almost killed momentum for the Coyotes. It didn't give them any momentum. They didn't get any scoring chances on that last power play you mentioned, Drew. So, I mean, this Coyotes team is absolutely awful. And even though they, you know, score 3 goals and they make this game interesting, I mean, just watching this team, I mean, they have trouble putting together 2 or 3 passes at times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at times I thought, you know, the Jets kind of played down to their competition.
I would agree with that.
After playing some good teams like Tampa Bay and Vegas. So, and we should mention Colorado as well. They're a pretty good team this year. So, you know, it's a good point that you make, but, you know, again, in this situation, you know that you've got important games coming up against St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Rangers are, you know, in a bit of a tailspin here with them coming into town.
They're getting blown out tonight as well at home, I think, against Boston, just being embarrassed on home ice at Madison Square Garden tonight.
But the most important part is not only do they get the 2 points, as we talked about, mm-hmm. but you're going to get Mark Scheifele back. You're going to get some other bodies back into the lineup. Matt Hendricks is going to be back. Adam Lowry won't be back on Friday. He's out a little bit longer than some of the other Jets that are currently injured. But you look at this game and you take the 2 points, it's a cliche, and you move on. You don't really think about it too much.
No, I would agree with you there. And you mentioned, you know, Kyle Connor and how, you know, he's sort of been, I mean, demoted, for lack of a better word, because Roslovic's up playing, at least, you know, last night was playing with the top line. What I've liked about Kyle Connor's game, though, is that he hasn't sort of been, you know, he hasn't been moping around as a result of the demotion from the top line of the Jets. I think he sees it just sort of as a bit of a valley in the course of his rookie season, because, you know, rookies always hit a wall. They always sort of hit a wall at the NHL level where they go through a little bit of the doldrums. And he's been sort of taken off that top line responsibility, but he's still been producing for the Winnipeg Jets. And I think that's what is so important for for the Jets to see is that even in a lesser role against lesser competition, he's being able to maybe find his game a little bit more. And I think it'll be only be a matter of time until he's back up in a more prominent role, as I think Jack Roslovic will go through some of those doldrums over the next, you know, 20 or so games, you know, as we head into April and as we head into the stretch drive of the season. It's just a positive for the Jets that they have the ability to replace a struggling player with somebody who's been there earlier in the year, and they just sort of cycle through the performance doldrums, and so that nobody is in a valley when they need to be playing with top flight talent.
Yeah, I agree. Kyle Connor isn't going to stay on the fourth line as far as I'm concerned, and you know, he still looked pretty good out there. I think he had about 3.5 minutes of power play time. And you know, Jack Roslovic, you mentioned earlier, I mean, because he has played and fit in really comfortably playing alongside Blake Wheeler, he's going to stay there for now. But you know, look at the lines today at practice, Drew, and yeah, you know, Blake Wheeler was with Mark Scheifele and Patrick Laine. Obviously, Mark Scheifele was back at his familiar center spot, so we don't expect Jack Roslovic to stay on that top line for much longer. But when you have players like Kyle Connor and Matthew Perreault that can go basically on any line, mm-hmm, whether it's the second, third, or fourth line, I mean, these lines are going to be in flux for much of the rest of the regular season and going into the playoffs. But I agree with you. I mean, Kyle Connor looked good last night, and I don't really have that many problems with Kyle Connor's game throughout the year. I mean, sure, he's had some bad games, and he's had some great games, but...
he's a rookie.
Exactly.
He's a rookie, but he doesn't look out of place. And that's what you want to see from a rookie. Every NHL coach knows that some rookies are going to have times where they struggle or where things don't go their way, or they learn lessons because they do something that's a little bit foolish that they might be able to get away with either at the AHL or the college level. But at no time since he's been called up from the Manitoba Moose, I mean, people forget he didn't make the team out of the training camp, but he got called up so quickly because of the injuries, that since he's been called up, at no time did you ever think, boy, Kyle Connor looks like he's, you know, overmatched or he doesn't belong at the NHL level. And I think the same thing sort of with Jack Roslovic as of late. It's going to be real hard for the Jets to send Jack Roslovic back down to the AHL once they're fully healthy. And I think he's done enough that he's at least proven that he's probably NHL ready at this point in time.
I don't think there's any doubt that Roslovic is NHL ready. It just comes down to numbers. Mm-hmm. And once the Jets get all their bodies back, and we're talking, you know, specifically about getting forwards back into the lineup,
sure,
I think it becomes a situation where, are you going to have to trade a player? Are you going to have to put a player on waivers? What are you doing with Sean Mathias? What are you doing with Marco Dano? I think we all expect Nick Petan and Brendan Lemieux to be the first two players sent back to the Manitoba Moose, and that's mm-hmm. just because they were the two most recent players to be called up. But, you know, I'm kind of on the fence on this one. You know that Craig Heisinger and Pascal Vincent definitely want Jack Roslovic playing for the Manitoba Moose, but I think the same thing could be said, you know, for Paul Maurice and Chevy possibly wanting Jack Roslovic, you know, for the stretch run and going into the playoffs, especially when you see him pop goals like he did last night. So yeah, for me,
that's a goal scorer's goal last night.
Absolutely, and that's what he is. Roslovic is a goal scorer, yeah, and for me, it's kind of 50-50 right now. I mean, flip a coin whether Roslovic stays up with the Jets or not. I mean, he's going to obviously stay with the Jets, you know, in the short term, but as far as, you know, a week or two from now, remains to be seen. I don't have the answer to that one. I'm kind of leaning towards, you know, keeping him up with the Jets, whereas before I was kind of leaning towards sending him back down to the Moose. But we'll have to see.
Quickly, as we're up against it, as a quick note about Nick Petan's game last night. Obviously, he took the two penalties, which certainly isn't ideal.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
he had a goal. Yeah. He had a goal for the Jets.
Yeah, he didn't play much. But you know, you mentioned the penalties. I mean, that's, you know, something that you don't like to see. You know, it's a nice tip for Nick Petan, and you know, maybe he doesn't play as much because of those penalties.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, it's one game here, so I don't think you want to look too much into his performance in one game. There were some good and some bad. But overall, I mean, I liked his game in a short amount of time. I think he was just over 9 minutes.
9-11, even strength.
There you go.
He had 1 second of power play time, so that doesn't count. And, of course, no shorthanded time for him.
Yeah, so he was fine. And, you know, it's a a great opportunity for Patan to get some NHL action. We know he's going to get sent down to the Moose fairly shortly here, but you definitely don't like to see those penalties, I'll say that much.
You definitely don't. When we come back, we talk about the Jets and the Blues. They're the next team into Bell MTS Place on Friday night, a key Central Division rival, a Central Division matchup between these two rivals. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
And the Winnipeg Jets, after losing to Chicago, will get back in the win column as Connor Hellebuck picks up his second shutout of the year, his second career shutout against the St. Louis Blues, and his eighth career shutout as he stops 24-24.
Dennis Bayock with the call back in December. A Sunday afternoon victory for the Winnipeg Jets over the St. Louis Blues. That was the last time these two Central Division rivals met. They will do battle again this coming Friday at Bell MTS Place as the Jets continue their lengthy homestand. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy, always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Ezzy, it'll be a good game on Friday night after what was a definite stinkeroo on Tuesday night. I mean, you just have to assume it's a Friday night. Both teams, both rivals, the Blues look up, see the Jets in the standings, but the Blues look behind them, and they don't have to look too far behind them in the Central Division standings, as the Dallas Stars are now only a point behind the Blues with a game in hand. Interesting to note, though, for the Blues, of course, it's going to be the second half of a back-to-back as the Blues are home to Colorado on Thursday night and then fly to Winnipeg for the game on Friday. So a back-to-back situation for the Blues when they come into town on Friday. And, of course, they'll be facing a well-rested Winnipeg Jets team, having had 2 days off between the game on Tuesday and Friday night's battle.
And, you know, Drew, you mentioned, you know, the stinker on last night between the Jets and the Coyotes. It was a stinker if you're the St. Louis Blues last night, mm-hmm. because they got absolutely whooped by the Minnesota Wild. And, you know, Jake Allen comes into the game for Carter Hutton, who's been phenomenal as of late. And, you know, you wonder who gets the start tomorrow night versus Colorado. Is it going to be Jake Allen or Carter Hutton? And if you're a Jets fan, whichever goalie doesn't start tomorrow night, that's most likely going to be the goalie that you see Friday night at Bell MTS Place between the Jets and the Blues. But, you know, Jake Allen, he's having a rough year. And, you know, with Carter Hutton now kind of splitting the starts with Jake Allen, at times he's actually had more starts than Jake Allen. You kind of wonder, you know, where are the Blues going here heading into the playoffs? And I believe the Blues have won 6 of their last 9 games. But as you mentioned, Drew, they've kind of, you know, fallen off a little bit. And the Jets and the Predators have, you know, pulled away a little bit here. The Predators mm-hmm. and the Leafs are in overtime as we speak here. So the Predators are now 1 point behind the Jets.
And they might be tied with the Jets, depending if they're able to get the bonus point here.
Exactly. And we'll see what happens. But, I mean, definitely the Jets and the Predators are battling for that Central Division crown right now. And as you mentioned, you know, the Blues are basically trying to fend off the likes of the Dallas Stars and the Minnesota Wild. So, you know, you look at the Blues and, you know, for me, it's really been the Jaden and the Braden show this year.
Yeah, Jaden and Braden. Nice.
But it's been a bit of a struggle, you know, when you talk about, you know, where this team is heading because of, you know, some of the problems they've had in goal and on defense. And, mm-hmm. you know, Alex Pietrangelo, for me, the first half of the season, he was maybe, you know, a top three Norris candidate up there with, you know, guys like Drew Doughty. So, you know, the defense is not necessarily, you know, taking a significant step back, but, you know, they've had trouble getting secondary scoring at times. Vladimir Tarasenko and Alex Steen have, you know, struggled a little bit offensively. You know, Braden Schenn has come back into the lineup here and, you know, looked really good, but, you know, it's going to be one of those games where the Blues, you know, depending on what happens tomorrow night against the Colorado Avalanche, I mean, they're going to be much more desperate than the Jets are, but the Jets are definitely going to want to erase, you know, that ugly game yesterday, even though they got the 2 points, they didn't like the way they finished that game. So, you know, I wouldn't expect anything but a close game because as of late, with the exception of that Colorado game, it seems like every game the Jets play lately is a one-goal game.
And the Jets and Blues historically, of course, have played very close games against each other. The last one, of course, the Jets getting the shutout, so that wasn't a one-goal game. You mentioned the Blues struggles offensively. You know, 152 goals for puts them tied 16th in the entire NHL.
It's very surprising, by the way, Drew.
That it's not higher.
With all the firepower they have, Vladimir Tarasenko, a former 40-goal scorer. I mean,
he's having an average year.
He's not going to score 40 this year.
And he's got 21 goals and 26 assists for 47 points in 55 games. And, you know, most people would say those are pretty good numbers. For Tarasenko, though, you're used to seeing him more at a point-a-game level, so he's a little bit below his mark. You know, and after that, as you're absolutely right, after, you know, can you imagine if Braden Schenn, who's a nice player, but nobody ever thought Braden Schenn was going to be this good this year coming over from Philadelphia. If he wasn't having a career year, this team would really be struggling offensively. I mean, Alex Steen is, you know, only got 32 points. You know, Paul Stastny is going to be a free agent at season's end. He's, you know, 35, 36 points. They just haven't had, to your point, that secondary scoring, you know, once you get past the Tarasenko and then Braden Schenn, who has been a absolute revelation for them since coming over in the offseason.
Yeah, and, you know, for me, even though they've been having trouble scoring goals, I mean, this is still a very deep team. You know, 1-4 up the middle, Braden Schenn, Paul Stastny, Patrick Berglund, Kyle Brodziak. I mean, it's still a very formidable lineup. And, you know, even though they've had, you know, some trouble with their secondary scoring, I mean, this is still a team on most nights is going to be competitive. You don't see this team lose 6-2 very often. So it's
without having a good bounce back, especially.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the goaltending was not good. If you saw the highlights of that game, I mean, Carter Hutton was flipping and flopping all over the place.
Yeah, and he's been so good. You mentioned, I mean, Carter Hutton, .943 save percentage and a .174 goals against average, and that's in 24 games. He's definitely been stealing starts from Jake Allen, who's struggled this year, but we saw that last year where he struggled and then put it all together towards the end of the season, and then they went on that run in the playoffs where they got past the Minnesota Wild. I think they eventually lost in the second round, but they got, you know, one round further than anyone really expected the Blues to get.
And what was interesting about last night's game is the Blues went with 7 defensemen.
Yes, I was going to mention
that. And 11 forwards. And they've only done that 3 times this year. Mm-hmm. Tage Thompson, a rookie forward, former first-round pick, he wasn't in the lineup. I'd expect him to be back in the lineup tomorrow night versus Colorado, and then on Friday versus the Jets. They're going to need him, as you mentioned, with the back-to-back games. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, it's still a very good team. I'm not trying to say this isn't a very good team, but they're having their struggles. I mean, they were right up there with the Jets and the Predators battling for first in the Central. And, you know, right now they're battling 2 different teams just to kind of stay in that third spot in the Central Division. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about this for the last month here. I mean, this Central Division is so close. The only team that's really out of it right now is Chicago. I mean, I'm prepared to say Chicago is most likely not going to be a playoff team unless they win 5, 6, 7 games in a row, Drew. I mean, that game last night versus Calgary, they had to have that game.
And they lost 3-2 to Calgary last night. You're absolutely right. The problem that the Blackhawks are running into, in addition to the fact that they're just not really playing that good hockey, is there's so many teams now between them and the playoffs.
Well, and they're running out of time.
Yeah, oh, yeah. 50. I mean,
we're in almost mid-February.
29
here.
Games left, and you're going to have to leapfrog over the Kings, the Ducks, the Avalanche, and then either the Wild or the Stars to get into the playoffs. So it's not looking likely, you're absolutely right, Ezzy, for the Chicago Blackhawks. And the Blues, the Dallas Stars are only a point behind them. I mean, the Blues look like they're close in the standings to the Predators, but the Predators have 4 games in hand on the Blues, making up one of those right now as they need to score in this shootout attempt right here in order to stay alive, and they did because the Predators are just a dynamic team. They're still going in the shootout in Toronto between the Preds and the Maple Leafs. You mentioned they went with 7 defensemen. That'll be interesting. We have Luke Korak, St. Louis Blues correspondent, coming up next. We'll ask him about that. The power play for the Blues, really struggling. You wouldn't expect this. You know, 28th in the NHL, their power play, you know, at 16%. So you know that Mike Yeo wants to get that power play going because it's surprising with a power play that's got triggers like Tarasenko and that's got triggers like Alex Pietrangelo can be so poor that they're, you know, right at the bottom of the NHL.
Well, and Alex Steen's a guy that they like to have on the point as well, but it kind of reminds you of the Jets the last couple of years. I agree. I mean, you look at, you know, some of the forwards that they trot out there, and they have no shortage of snipers. You mentioned Braden Schenn's having a career year, Jaden Schwartz. I mean, we can go up and down the list, but it just hasn't been clicking, and, you know, it's something that has taken momentum away from them at times, and you know,
do you think they're buyers? Are they buyers at the trade deadline, you think, the Blues? Do they still, are they?
Well, you're hearing rumors that a guy like Max Pacioretty might be going to St. Louis.
Yeah, Mike Hoffman's name has been bandied about as a bit potential.
Oh, they're absolutely buyers.
But are they good in the, are they in the same caliber as the Predators or the Jets?
I don't think so. I think and for me, Vegas isn't even in that group. I think the Jets and the Predators are the two best teams in the West.
I agree.
And that's
with
no
you.
Disrespect to the Vegas Golden Knights. But I just don't think the Vegas Golden Knights are as good as the Jets or the Predators.
The Vegas Golden Knights, all due respect, and they're the best story in the NHL. I agree with you. I don't think they're as good as the Jets or the Predators, despite what the standings say. But the standings don't account for the fact, or they don't, you know, it's an asterisk, because they play the Oilers, the Canucks, and the Coyotes probably 15 times, you know, this season.
Well, and you also won't have a seven-game series where all seven games are at home.
That too.
Right?
That
I mean,
too.
They've been significantly better at home. You could say the same thing about the Jets as well.
Sure.
But, I mean, for me, it's a little bit more of an anomaly if you're the Vegas Golden Knights. So, I mean, yes, I think the Blues, you know, are a step below the Winnipeg Jets and the Nashville Predators. Not by much. But, I mean, we talked about it. I mean, this team just doesn't score enough goals right now, and the goaltending hasn't been good enough. Now, I think Jake Allen and Carter Hutton are great goalies. By the way, I think Jake Allen starts tomorrow night, and then the Jets get Carter Hutton. That's what I think is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll have to wait and see, obviously, until tomorrow. But,
I think if I'm trying to remember, if Carter Hutton's from Thunder Bay, and he's had some success against the Jets previously.
Yep.
You know, this is sort of the closest place to his hometown. When he was with Nashville, he started against the Jets a couple times at Bell MTS Place.
Yep, that's right. And, you know, so for me, it's not that the goaltending isn't good, but it just hasn't been good as of late. And, you know, Jake Allen is a guy who waited for years, you know, to take over that number one slot from Brian Elliott, and he was excellent for the majority of last year, but, you know, he just hasn't been playing very well. And, I mean, that happens throughout the league. It happened with Devan Dubnyk earlier this season. It happened with Connor Hellebuyck a little bit last year. So, I mean, you know, goaltending is a very difficult position. So I think they are going to be, you know, a contender. But as far as the trade deadline goes, and we'll ask Luke Korak coming up here, but I think if you're the Blues, you have to go for it. And that's because if you're any of the 16 teams that make the playoffs, I mean, you have a shot of going all the way.
Mm-hmm. And that just tells you how close the parity is between the top team and then the 16th team that squeaks into the playoffs. We'll bring in Luke Korak after these commercial messages. A quick note, though, Carter Hutton started one game earlier this season against the Jets. It was on Saturday night, December 16th. That back-to-back situation, remember the home-and-home between the Jets and the Blues? 48-save shutout for Carter Hutton against the Jets back in St. Louis on Saturday, December 16th. So it certainly would not be a surprise to see him in net Friday night at Bell MTS Place. When we come back, Lou Korak joins us, St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Wednesday evening, bottom of the hour. You're listening to NHL This Week. Drew Mindell and Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From NHL.com, we are pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Lou Korak. Lou is the St. Louis Blues correspondent for that fine website. Lou, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. How are you?
Doing very well, Lou. Always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us a little bit later than normal on a Wednesday evening, but we appreciate you staying up late with us. Lou, we haven't seen the Blues in just under 2 months since that home-and-home between the Jets and the Blues on the 16th and 17th of December. Since then, it seems like when that home-and-home started, it seemed like the Jets and the Blues and the Predators were all sort of battling for the top in the Central Division. Since then, it seems like the Jets and the Predators have sort of maybe taken a step up and sort of separated themselves a little bit from the Blues. You know, what's been going on with the Blues over the last, let's say, 6 to 8 weeks?
Well, they're winning a lot of close games, and when they lose, they don't mess around. They lose pretty handily, and it happened last night against Minnesota. It's just too much inconsistency in their game right now. You know, I'll be honest with you, their goaltending's probably been their MVPs this year. You know, when their goalies are on, and really, it's been a lot of Carter Hutton here lately, where he's been really, really, really good. And, you know, last night was the exception to the rule there. But when those guys are on, this team's got a chance to win every night. And when they're not, as you saw last night, they're going to get beat. And, you know, they outshot Minnesota 37-20 last night. A little bit of an aberration there, too. It was 19-2 in the third period, but the game was already well out of hand. But, you know, for this goaltending tandem to allow 6 goals on 20 shots is pretty rare. And but it's just they've been having trouble scoring. You know, let's face it, and that's gone back to, you know, when Jaden Schwartz got hurt on December the 9th when he hurt his right ankle, and you know, the team was going really well then. But ever since then, since he's gone down, it, you know, and I know he's been back for 5 games, but you know, you can't expect one guy to jump back into the lineup and just pick everybody else up, and they're gonna start scoring 4 or 5 goals a night. But it's just been a struggle scoring goals, and you know, this team is built around goaltending and defensive structure, and when those things break down, you're gonna have results like you had last night. And you know, they got off to a good start, and the Minnesota Wild after that, you know, capitalized on some mistakes, took advantage of it, and you know, got this team in a hole, and pretty much good night. And you know, in their last 3 home losses, they've been outscored 18-8, and I think that's probably been the biggest problematic spot for this team, is they just haven't been as dominant as they have been in the past on home ice. And what's crazy here is you know, they started 5-0 on home ice, and they were the last team in the NHL to lose at home this year. But since then, they've gone 13-11 in the last 24 games. And if you're going to be a playoff team, and if you're going to contend, and if you're going to want to make a move and advance past the first round, you know, you're going to have to get the job done on home ice. And right now, this team's not getting the job done on home ice.
Lou, last night, the St. Louis Blues went with 7 defensemen and 11 forwards. I believe that was only the 3rd time this year that the Blues have done that. Do you expect Tage Thompson to go back into the lineup tomorrow night versus Colorado? And what have you thought of the big rookie thus far this year?
I do expect him to get back in tomorrow night, and it's just something that Mike Yeo wanted to give a look to as go back to the 11 and 7 format, because let's be honest, for the most part, and again, last night was a bit of the exception to the rule, you know, they're just 7 defensemen have been pretty steady, and he's had a hard time, you know, deciding which 6 to play. And, you know, Tage Thompson has had a little bit of his struggles here, and that's to be expected. He's 20 years old and only played in 23 NHL games. And, you know, I talked to him actually today after they had an optional skate. And, you know, a lot of people here in St. Louis were pretty upset that they didn't get out there and get bag skated again. But, you know, what people don't understand is this team's going to be playing now 3 games in the next 4 days, really 3.5 days, because they're playing Sunday morning against Pittsburgh. So after they leave Winnipeg on Friday. But yeah, I talked to Tage Thompson, and you know, he understands it. He knows that there's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be challenges. It's his rookie year, and you know, as long as he, you know, sticks with what the coach is wanting to do, and they were going to work with him on some video and stuff, and they seem to really like his game because he's got a big frame, and he's a guy that when he moves with and without the puck, he's pretty dangerous. And he's got a heck of a reach. He's got a great wrist shot, and he's only going to continue to grow. But this is just part of the process. And you know, he's taking it like a pro. He's not pouting like a young kid, like some young kids tend to do. And he understands that you know, there's going to be ups and downs in his game, and as long as he learns from those things, that it's only going to help him mature and get better. So it was just, I believe, just a one-time chance here. I mean, he had played 19 straight games, so first time he had, you know, sat out a game in 20. So, but I think they're going to go back and get him in there, because right now, you know, unless this team makes any moves leading up to the deadline here, you know, they're going to have to rely on kids like Tage Thompson to provide some offense. And granted, he's only got 3 goals and 3 assists in 23 games, but he always gives them that dangerous option, and they've utilized him on the power play along with another rookie, Vince Dunn, and they like what those two kids have done for him so far.
Luke Korak is our guest here on NHL This Week. Luke covers the St. Louis Blues for NHL.com. Lou, you mentioned the upcoming trade deadline. I mean, the Blues seem as though they need a sort of an offensive jolt to their lineup. They're 16th overall in the NHL in goals for. They don't have a first-round pick in this upcoming draft. They've already traded that away as part of the Braden Schenn deal. So do you think the Blues are buyers? Because we've heard their name linked to some pretty hefty names as we approach what I'll call the silly season over the next 3 weeks here in the NHL?
Well, that's an interesting question. And, you know, Doug Armstrong usually keeps his cards close to the vest here. And I do believe that they're kicking the tires on some people out there. It's pretty much the case with every team. It's going to all depend on what the cost is going to be. I don't believe the Blues are going to get too involved here in any of the rental names that you're going to hear out there. And Doug Armstrong has been a guy that's in the past, you know, if he feels like that he can make an impact trade, he'd like to do it for somebody that perhaps is available out there that still has term beyond this year. He's just not one of those guys that's going to go out there and give up one of their good young prospects for somebody that they're just going to have for, what, 2 months. And, you know, I know names like Rick Nash is out there. Evander Kane is out there. You know, there are a number of pending unrestricted free agents that could potentially be had and can really help this team out, because they do, in the worst way, I believe, need a top six forward. And but then again, you're probably talking about half the teams in the league that do and are going to be looking for one. So, you know, the stakes are going to go up. The prices are going to go up on some of these guys. And like you said, they don't have a first-round pick this year. You know, that went in the Braden Schenn trade. And I think, you know, if you look at the grand scheme of things, that's worked out really well for this team. But there's a prime example right there where Doug Armstrong made a trade at the NHL draft for a player that's got term. And Braden Schenn's got term, and I think that's what they're looking for. So, you know, if a name like a Max Pacioretty pops up out there, a Mike Hoffman pops up out there, and I have been told that, you know, they have kicked the tires on a Mike Hoffman, but he's got term left on his contract and isn't an unrestricted free agent. So if they go via any route, I believe that's the route that they will go. But again, it's all going to depend on the price and, you know, the guys that, you know, people are going to ask for around the Blues are going to be, you know, good young prospects like Robert Thomas, like Jordan Carew. You know, you may even have, you know, teams asking about Tage Thompson. There's Clem Costin, who's a 2017 number one pick, just like Robert Thomas. I mean, those are some of the guys that come to mind right off the top of my head. Jake Walman's a defenseman playing in the AHL right now. So they've got some good young prospects. It's just depends on if they're willing to give any of them up or not. And if they truly believe that, you know, they can make a run at the cup this year, that's another area that they're going to have to explore. Do you want to give up future assets if you have any questions whether you believe you can make a deep run at it or not? That's something that they're going to have to address as well.
Lou, with what transpired last night, Carter Hutton was pulled by Mike Yeo, Jake Allen comes into the game. Does it make sense that Jake Allen plays tomorrow night versus Colorado, and then you see Carter Hutton play Friday night versus the Jets, considering that Carter Hutton had that 48-save shutout back in December?
Yeah, I think that's the way they are going to go. And Mike Yost said last night and yesterday during the day when we talked to him that right now, you know, that they really don't have any set major plan with their goalies. They're kind of taking this on a day-by-day basis. And, you know, Carter Hutton, again, has played really, really well for this team, and I think they're going to continue to ride him as long as, you know, he's going to give them a chance to win. And, you know, again, last night was, you know, kind of the exception to the rule where, you know, he gave up 3 goals on 8 shots and wasn't his greatest night, obviously, and neither was it for the team. But I do believe they're going to go with Jake Allen tomorrow because they played him last week in Boston, and let's make no mistake, Boston's one of the best teams in the league going right now, and Jake Allen gave them a chance to win that game. They want, you know, that's a 2-1 game down the stretch until Boston scores a last second empty netter. And he made 43 saves in that game and looked like the Jake Allen of old, the Jake Allen that was, in net for the Blues for much of early this year and in the playoffs last year. So they really want to, in the big picture here, they really want to get Jake Allen going and get him feeling good about his game again, and he continues to work hard. Yeah, I believe they're going to get him in. And we talked to Jake today, and, you know, obviously he played the card of he didn't, you know, nobody knows who's going to play tomorrow, but these guys, they know what's going on here the next couple of days. But, yeah, I do think you're going to see Carter Hutton in Winnipeg on Friday. But then again, I thought we were going to see Jake Allen on Saturday after that good performance in Boston. We thought we were going to see him Saturday against Buffalo, and Mike Gill comes back with Carter Hutton, and he gets a shutout. So, you know, he's kept us guessing pretty well, but I do think they've got a pretty good idea here of what they're going to do because they've got some tough opponents. After Colorado and obviously going to be in Winnipeg Friday, they've got Pittsburgh coming in here. And don't look now, but the Penguins are getting their engines revved up again here too. So a tough stretch of games for St. Louis, no doubt.
Lou, we'll let you go on this last question. The power play, certainly struggling this season, 28th overall in the NHL, only clicking at 16%. I mean, given the some of the top-flight names the Blues have on that power play, why is it struggling so much with the extra man, and how concerned is Mike Yeo?
Well, you got to be concerned. I mean, you're into the, you know, you're down to, what, 20-some-odd games left for this team, and you're among the bottom teams in the league on the power play, and it's a mystery question right now. It's been a number of things. At times, it could be their zone entries just have been too inconsistent, and other times when they do gain the zone, they're trying to make the perfect pass, and pucks are getting deflected out of the zone, or guys are losing pucks too easily, and they're just not getting enough pucks to the net. They're trying to make, to me, too cute of a play out there, and instead of just getting bodies to the net, which is what this team is known for. This team is not known for they're going to go out there and consistently get that tic-tac-toe type of a goal. They're a team that drives the net. They get the puck back to some of their big boomers on the blue line, like a Colton Parayko, who you want him shooting any chance you get, because, you know, anybody that wants to step in front of his shot, good luck there, because if you're going to sacrifice the body, you're going to pay a hefty price. Get to the net and drive the net and get some of those loose pucks and knock pucks into the net, which, you know, you've got guys like Stastny, who's really good at doing that, and they're using Steen more down low instead of out at the point. But it's just simple execution that they're not getting done right now. And, you know, until that starts to change, you're pretty much going to see the results that they've been getting. I mean, last night you had a Minnesota team that had allowed five power play goals in their last seven chances on the road, and the Blues didn't get much of a sniff on three power play attempts last night. That's just kind of the way it's been going. There have been games where they've been able to get on track, but it's just been too up and down, and until they get that worked out, you know, they're going to have some challenges on their hands here down the stretch. But they need their special teams to get going on both, not just the power play, but the penalty kill as well.
Lou Korak is the St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. He's a good friend of the show. Lou, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Lou. Appreciate it again. When we come back, as he's fired up about Alex Burrows, we'll let him rant a little bit, get some emotions off that chest of his. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Well, here he is, though. Taylor Hall, playing in his 500th NHL game, lays out Burrows with a massive hit. Burrows takes exception and goes after Hall. Hall ignores him, but then after the whistle, that's when things get ugly. Burrows keeps going after Hall, tackles him to the ice, gets a couple of shots in, and then keep your eyes on Burrows' right knee. We've highlighted it for you as he knees Hall in the head, not once, but twice.
That was from SportsCenter last night, Laura Dykin breaking it down. The interaction, which, and I'm being charitable, the interaction between Taylor Hall and Alex Burrows. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you haven't checked out their entry in La Poutine Week, I got that right after the discussion on Saturday's show?
Yeah.
La Poutine Week, it ends tomorrow. So you better hurry to Bernstein's Deli tomorrow morning and get your hands on their entry for La Poutine Week and fill up on French fries, brisket, and it's actually not French fries. It's potato latke that they've turned into French fries.
Yeah, in this case, you should risk it and try the brisket.
Ah, nice pun. Alex Burrows was risking his NHL salary with his interaction last night with Taylor Hall. And in fact, it's going to cost him a lot of money as he's been suspended for 10 games. Going to cost him $134,000, a little more than that, $134,408.60 to be perfectly exact, for 10-game suspension for his kneeing and aggressive behavior towards the New Jersey Devils star player, Taylor Hall. Did the NHL Department of Player Safety get it right in giving Burrows 10 games?
I think they did, Drew. And, you know, we should mention that Alex Burrows can appeal this decision.
He can.
But for now, it's 10 games.
The appeal goes to Commissioner Gary Bettman.
Right. And this upset me. And, you know, I was at the game last night, obviously, between the Jets and the Coyotes. So I only saw the replay of this. But, I mean, this was completely uncalled for. And I realized that Alex Burrows, you know, started off his pro hockey career with the Manitoba Moose here. This is a guy that was not drafted and was basically discovered by the Manitoba Moose and then went on to play, of course, for the Vancouver Canucks, went to the Stanley Cup Final and all of that and has had a nice lengthy career.
A self-made NHL player.
Absolutely. But, I mean, this was ridiculous. I mean, Taylor Hall, first off, you know, that's a nice gift by Alex Burrows for Hall's 500th career game. I mean, Hall lays, you know, if you've seen the replay, you know, Taylor Hall, it's a clean body check on Alex Burrows. Alex Burrows doesn't like it, so he kind of chases Taylor
Hall.
Doesn't
like it because he's embarrassed because Taylor Hall's not a physical player.
He's not. He's a goal scorer, in my opinion.
Yeah,
he's
one of the best left wingers.
Top 10 left winger in the game, maybe top five, Drew. I mean, I'm biased. You know this. I'm a Devils fan. Yeah. And maybe that's why I'm upset. But the reality here is, I mean, Burrows, with his history, he's been suspended before. He's been fined five times. The NHL Department of Player
Safety.
Not
a repeat offender because he hasn't been suspended since 2014.
But he's been fined many times for stuff like this, garbage like this.
Absolutely. And if you asked around about guys who are the so-called rats of the NHL, Alex Burrows would probably be considered a rat of the NHL.
He's a dirty player. And let's be honest here. I think what makes this worse is he's towards the end of his NHL career. He's in his mid-30s. He's not going to be playing in the NHL for the next 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, he might have 1, maybe 2 years left in the NHL as far as I'm concerned.
He's got a year left on his current contract.
Right. And, you know, for me, I mean, not only does he go after Taylor Hall after the whistle, I mean, he sucker punches him. And as far as I'm concerned, that sucker punch alone gets you 3 or 4 games. The kneeing to the head, I mean, this isn't the UFC, Drew. Mm-hmm. I mean, that type of stuff is ridiculous. It's garbage. And I think the NHL Department of Player Safety, say whatever you want about them, and you can say, you know, that sometimes they're too lenient on guys. For me, I mean, he absolutely deserves 10 games. I think you could even suspend him more for this. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, I know there are some out there that are saying, you know, because this is a star player, you know, this is the only reason why he got 10 games. I don't care if it's Taylor Hall.
I don't have a problem with that,
I don't care if it's Brian Gibbons or Kyle Palmieri, obviously other guys that play for the Devils that are lesser knowns than Taylor Hall. I mean, this type of stuff, I mean, if you haven't seen it already, go watch the replay. Not only does Burrows sucker punch him, not only does he punch him 3 or 4 times, he basically rams his head on the ice. And when he's kneeing Taylor Hall is actually protecting his head. I mean, this is a defenseless player. As you mentioned, this isn't a guy that's known for his fisticuffs. Fisticuffs. I mean, he's not known for being a physical player. So, I mean, this really upset me. I think this was a really cheap play by Alex Burrows. I just don't think he was thinking at all. And, you know, hopefully with this 10-game suspension, you know, he rethinks this and you know, he doesn't let it happen again.
Well, it's certainly, like you said, it's not his first time. And here's what Taylor Hall and Devils head coach John Hines had to say last night after the game about the actions of Alex Burrows.
Well, I mean, he punched me in the back of the head 10 times. I thought it was a clean hit.
What is he doing?
Yeah, he was losing his mind. I think he kneed me in the back of the head at one point, too. So, you know, I think he has a bit of a reputation for, you know, for some player safety stuff. I think he's cleaned it up a lot in the recent past, but that didn't feel great when he was rabbit punching me there.
4-minute penalty, you know, that's not called for to do that, but he is what he is.
John Hines, I like the line. He is what he is. I mean, these guys know the kind of player that Alex Burrows is, and Taylor Hall referenced it with his sort of history with the Department of Player Safety. And, I mean, Ezzy, you're fired up, even off air there as we were playing those clips. You're looking at me saying, what is Burrows doing?
He just takes this too far. I mean, the fact that he not only pursues Taylor Hall, keep in mind, it's not like they were shoving and then, you know, they kind of fall to the ground and then he does this. I mean, he goes after Taylor Hall in a predatory manner. And as we talked about, I mean, Hall is a guy that he's skating away from Burrows. And not only is he skating away, after he takes several punches, we just played the clip of Taylor Hall. He says he gets punched 10 times. I didn't count the punches, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was 10 punches. So not only does he kind of pursue him in a predatory way, but then once he's down on the ice and he's defenseless, he's kneeing him. I mean, You got to suspend him for 10 games if you're the NHL Department of Player Safety, because you have to take this type of garbage out of the game.
Well, the kneeing is what's so unusual. I mean, you've seen guys go after other guys and they get into a scrum and they throw some rabbit punches. They shouldn't, because, you know, face up against the guy man on man and everything else, and you're better off that way. It's the kneeing that you don't see a guy get another guy on the ice and try and jam your leg into his skull.
But you know what, Drew?
Often.
It's not even just the kneeing. I mean, I know you've seen the clip, but it's the sucker punch. It's the multiple punches even before the kneeing happens that mm-hmm. bother me. Obviously, to me, the kneeing is bad, but the kneeing is really just the icing on the cake. I mean, it's the whole sequence of Alex Burrows pursuing Taylor Hall in that type of manner. Obviously, the kneeing part is the worst part. Don't get me wrong. But it's everything. I mean, Taylor Hall just is a guy that isn't known for getting into it like that. And for me, it's Burrows taking advantage of a guy almost that he knows isn't going to fight back.
Well, and I think Alex Burrows, despite even getting a hefty 10-game suspension, is fortunate that Taylor Hall's not injured. If Hall is injured on the play, and I mean, I suppose there could be lingering problems that we don't know about yet, but it seems that he's fine. For conversation's sake, if Hall is injured on the play and he's out of the lineup, that 10-game suspension is probably a lot heftier if the Devils are going to be without their best player in the middle of a stretch drive to the playoffs, whereas Alex Burrows and his Senators have been one of the most disappointing teams all season long.
I mean, Alex Burrows has played, what, 800, 900 NHL games? I mean, he's got to know better than that. It's as simple as that. You just can't do that type of stuff.
And he does know better. He just, you know, he gets red. He sees red. He doesn't know how to turn it off, and that's what ends up happening.
He's going to lose a lot of money, so he can, you know, think about that.
Last word on it goes to Jamie McLennan, former, of course, NHL player. This is from last night's SportsCenter as well.
I'm fine with looking for retaliation because he felt that he was wronged by a big hit by Taylor Hall. So you want to go after him a little bit. But to me, there's a line crossed with the knee to the head. Here, Taylor Hall threw the body. Burrows doesn't like it, so he's going to go after him. There's a little bit of a battle. Now, Andy Green can break this up. He can do a little bit better instead of going for a coffee at that moment. But Alex Burrows gets a couple shots in. But here, with the knee to the back of the head, to me, that's crossing a line. The league has to take a stance in a situation like that. So it's easily suspendable.
That's Jamie McLennan.
He's
with
right.
Mark Rowe on TSN SportsCenter last night.
I agree with everything he said.
When we come back, Mike Hajka of the Dallas Morning News is going to join us. We'll talk about the Jets' Central Division rival in the Lone Star State. You're listening to NHL This Week, hour number two up next on TSN 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mindell and Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Dallas Morning News in Dallas, Texas, he's a good friend of the show. He covers the Dallas Stars. His name is Mike Hajka. Mike, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure, Mike. It's sort of bizarre as we sit here in, you know, the first week of February that we have not had a game between the Jets and the Dallas Stars since, you know, relatively early on in November. So this Dallas Stars team, you know, a Central Division rival to the Winnipeg Jets, you know, has sort of been a little bit out of sight, out of mind for the Jets as we haven't seen the Stars in going on 3 months. But lo and behold, you look at the NHL standings, and there's the Dallas Stars certainly in the thick of the race for the playoffs in the Western Conference and nipping on the heels of the St. Louis Blues. They've come a long way since the team that the Jets beat relatively handily twice in the month of November.
Yeah, and funny, we were talking on the bus today. We're in Chicago right here, so we're taking the bus to the hotel. And the Stars and Jets have pretty much been the first-round playoff series for about 3 months right now, or 2 months at least. So, you know, I'm always just looking at it going, huh, I wonder how they do against the Jets, because it has been – Winnipeg's had such a hold on them, not just this year, but last year. And, I mean, they've just had trouble trying to handle whatever Winnipeg throws at them. So it is interesting. And then, of course, you know, the battle now is to try and get into the third place spot, I think, and get away from Winnipeg. But me and Scott Burnside, we're both saying, I wonder what they look like now. I mean, this is a different team than it was 2 months ago. So I do wonder what the Stars would look like in a head-to-head with Winnipeg.
No, Mike, we want to ask you about some of the Dallas Stars like Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn and Alex Radulov in his first year with the Stars. But every time I watch this team, and I think you're going to agree with me because you watch them and follow them more than anybody, I just continue to be amazed with John Klingberg. And I don't think enough people are talking about how good of a season he's having. He's essentially a point a game defenseman right now. And for me, it kind of all starts with John Klingberg when you talk about the Dallas offense.
Yeah, definitely. And he gets the puck to people where they need it, where it's good for them. A lot of what Hitch is designed is puck possession and puck support. And so what Lindy did was, Lindy was attack, attack, attack. And 2 years ago, it worked perfectly. But that meant that your defensemen, you know, whoever they may be, were probably pushing down either near the net or sometimes behind the net. And then that created some tracking back problems. So like if a Jamie Oleksiak, which he did, he'd go out behind the net and try and the offensive net and try and win a puck battle. Well, now when you're tracking back, all your forwards, your defensemen are all trying to change position. They're skating back towards the net instead of, you know, skating backwards facing the traffic coming at them. And so all of that mixes into chaos. Well, with John now, he is the guy who has the puck and he helps keep the chaos to a minimum. And that sounds funny because a lot of, you know, he still makes some pretty risky decisions here and there, but it's amazing watching how he, you know, I compare it because down there they don't, you know, get all of this, but I compare it to a good point guard in basketball. He controls the flow of the game. He controls who has the puck. He controls where they have the puck so that they can get it in places where they can, you know, get some open ice and use some time and space. And all of those things are fantastic. And then, of course, he also is, you know, a point-of-game defenseman, which we've seen in the past can win you a Norris Trophy. So it's been a great season for him, yeah.
Mike Hajka, our guest on NHL this week. Mike, speaking of Stars players, I guess the flip side to the equation, two guys who's having a great season like John Klingberg, are two guys who are certainly struggling, veteran players for the Stars, Jason Spezza, and then the offseason acquisition in Martin Hanzel. I mean, both of them are veterans. Just, you know, how do the Stars get either of these guys going, or is just this what they are at this point in their career?
Well, Spezza is interesting in that, you know, he's playing 13 minutes a game, and this is down from 16 last year and 17 the year before that and 18 the year before that. So he's going to have to pick his spots. I think what the hope is that he's still a very good power play player. He's a good even strength player with Matthias Janmark and Devin Shore. Those are two pretty good wingers. And so, you know, if you're playing him 13 minutes a game and he's, you know, picking up a point every now and then, and then he's helping your power play, I don't think they hate that. And I know that he costs $7.5 million, so, he, you know, it's just that's a lot of money, but it is what it is. And I think Ken Hitchcock believes, let's get the most out of this guy, you know, because, you know, his skills are deteriorating, and you just, you know, you got to hope for the best. Now, on Hansel, that's all injury. He has had six different injury situations this year, from ankle injury in training camp to a hand injury like two games in to I think it was a groin injury or hamstring injury, and then I think there's something also going on with maybe his hip, but they're all just calling it lower body or muscle injuries. And so he just hasn't been able to get up and running. But when he's played, especially in his more recent returns, he's actually been pretty good. And then the other part of this equation is Ken Hitchcock loves him. So, you know, when they get to the playoffs, if they get to the playoffs and they get to games that matter, Ken Hitchcock wants Martin Hansel on the ice, you know, at the end of periods, winning faceoffs, using his big body in front of the net on the power play, killing penalties. So Hansel is a real nebulous force in this whole thing, because if he's healthy, I think he's a huge part of what Ken Hitchcock wants to do. But he has to get healthy, and he hasn't been able to do that yet.
Mike, I mentioned Alex Radulov earlier, and he's obviously having a great offensive season thus far. He's already up to 21 goals on the year. But when you look at Alex Radulov's game, the totality of his game, is it not only the offense that he's brought to the Dallas Stars, but he's also brought that kind of that grit and that physicality? A lot of people don't necessarily know how good of a physical player Alex Radulov is. He made the Stars a harder team to play against, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny because, you know, we get into these, you know, word semantics and everything. He's not really hitting people, but he will dive headfirst into a pile of bodies to try and fish a puck out. And he goes hard on these puck battles. And he'll take a high stick or he'll take a spear or whatever. And he's a little bit reckless at times. But I think the Stars need that. Craig Ludwig was talking last year about how quiet their practices were. And, you know, they just, you know, Jamie Benn's not a loud guy. Tyler Seguin's not a loud guy when they're out there on the ice. So having a guy like Radulov who, you know, just ups the energy level and then, you know, goes headfirst into these puck battles, that's a great thing for this team. So you're right. I mean, you know, the numbers are great. The offense is great. But he also, a lot of the things that Ken talks about is puck possession, put the puck into the offensive zone, win the puck battles, and Alex Radulov does a lot of that stuff. So he helps the team in a lot more ways than just scoring.
Mike Hajka, our guest on NHL This Week, discussing the Dallas Stars. Mike, Ben Bishop was brought in the offseason from the Tampa Bay Lightning, given a sizable contract. The numbers aren't flashy, 919 save percentage, 2.44 goals against average, but has he been the stabilizing force in net that the Stars hoped for when they brought him over? I mean, you know, the gong show that was Niemi and Lehtinen just seems like it's been more stable with Bishop in the pipes.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all of it. I think Ben is a very good goalie. I mean, 6'7", that helps a lot. And he's, you know, he's very good in his technique. And then Kari has gotten better because he's not playing as much. He's not, you know, and the team's just playing better. They're not seeing the odd man rushes they saw last year. And so if you look in the, I just did a story for tomorrow. If you look in the last, I believe it's the last 10 games, they're giving up 1.8 goals per game. The first 10 games, they gave up 3.1. So even, you know, they were 29th in the league last year in goals against, and now they're fifth. So that's a huge jump. But they also went from 27th at the beginning of the year to, you know, fifth now. So all of that is all working together, and Ben's a huge part of it. And I always say on Ben, the key for him is going to be, can he win in the playoffs? Because that was, even when Kari was playing well, that was an issue for Kari. And you know, while Kari might become a force in the playoffs, we don't know. I believe that the trust of the fans and the players on the team are that, you know, this is Ben Bishop's, you know, playoff series, and he's got to win it. And, you know, there's a lot of good goalies out there. And the bottom line is, when you're in the playoffs, you need to be the better goalie. And I believe that they believe at this point in time, Ben Bishop has a chance to be the better goalie in a lot of series. So that's a big key for them. And you know, we still got 20-something games to go, so he could get even better. These last 8 or 10, he's been really good. So, you know, he could get even better. And if that's the case, then I think they really will be in a good place.
Mike, regular listeners of the show know that we have you on the show quite often. You've been a regular guest for the 9 years that we've been doing the show. And I know that 3 years ago we were asking you about Esa Lindell. And I know you were very excited about Esa Lindell. Of course, he's a defenseman for the Stars. And his kind of ascent in the NHL has been kind of slow. This year, do you finally see him becoming that defenseman that the Dallas Stars thought they had going back, you know, 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, definitely. And it's, I did a story on this one too, when they got rid of Nemeth and Oleksiak, and Johns was struggling at times, that you can sit there and say they don't develop defensemen well, but Klingberg found a way to make a way, and Lindell found a way to make his way. And so some of this is on the player to just, you know, bust through and prove that they are an NHL player. And Esa Lindell this year has busted through. I mean, he's done it. I don't want to say on his own because Rick Wilson's a really good coach. But he is just a guy who, one, compliments John Klingberg very well. They're paired together all the time. And two, makes a lot of smart plays. He's not particularly physical. He's not particularly fast. But he's usually in the right place at the right time. He can make a good, you know, 5-foot outlet. He can make a good 40-foot outlet. And he can get the puck out of trouble and get it to the offensive players. And so that's been just a fantastic thing. I think both John and Esa, if you look at the analytics of puck possession and, you know, SAT and Corsi and all that kind of stuff, they've been off the charts good. I know Esa leads the team in plus minus, I think, at plus 19. So that's a pretty good trick for a guy who's got, I think, 22 points. You know, he's done a really good job of fitting into what the coaches want, which is, I think, calm puck possession hockey.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. We're less than 3 weeks away from the trade deadline, so, I mean, that's certainly a topic of conversation for all hockey fans. Do you see this Dallas Stars team being a buyer at the deadline? You know, pretty comfortably in a playoff spot right now. I mean, as comfortable as any Central Division team can be. You know, sights set on being a top three team in the Central. You know, do you see, you know, Jim Neal, Ken Hitchcock, dipping into the trade deadline market to maybe improve an area on this team?
I think they very much would like to. I think they've kind of painted themselves into a corner with their contracts. They went for it in the summertime. And adding Bishop, Radulov, Mark Messot, Hanzel, that's a ton of money. So They're at about 73.9, I think, on the cap right now. So about 1.1 in real money, maybe about 2.5 to 3 million in cap space money at the trade deadline. So, you know, they have some options. They have some good young players. The thing I think everybody thinks they need is a top six right wing who can add some scoring punch. And if they could find a right-handed right wing who could add some scoring punch, you know, they might go for that. Then the question becomes, what do you do with Brett Ritchie, who's a right wing who wants to play in the top six? And the thought process is maybe the other team would take Brett Ritchie, who makes about 900,000, and then that opens up a little more space to get a more proven player. And then, you know, you dress up the deal and do whatever you have to do. But by sending out a player who's in that position, you just replace that player. You don't have to really shake up the lineup that much. And then you make the money work somehow. But they're going to have to be really tricky, because they don't have a whole lot of space. And I don't know exactly who they could go out there and get. But I wouldn't surprise me at all if Jim is making phone calls and trying to find people. You know, you hear guys like Rick Nash or whatever. I just don't think they can afford that. I don't think they can afford a $7.5 million cap hit, even for just the remainder of the season. They're pretty tight right now. So I think if you're looking for Stars people that would be attractive, it'd be more in the $3 or $4 million range. Maybe just a middle-of-the-road player, but a guy who could help, but, you know, not just kill you on the cap.
Well, the Jets' final game before the trade deadline is in Dallas on Saturday, February 24th, with the deadline coming up on the Monday. So, well, we'll know pretty soon if either of these two Central Division rivals are going to be buyers or sellers, unlikely to be sellers, but buyers at the upcoming trade deadline. Mike Hyka's with the Dallas Morning News. He covers the Dallas Stars. Mike, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Thank you. I always appreciate being on. You guys are great.
Thank you, Mike. Take care. We'll talk to you again soon.
Cheers, Mike.
When we come back, the New York Rangers have the big for sale sign on their clubhouse, on their locker room, on their dressing room. We'll talk about the Rangers coming up next. They mailed it in tonight on home ice. You're right about that. That's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The for sale sign is up on the New York Rangers. You mentioned they mailed it in tonight on home ice, losing 6-1 on home ice to the Boston Bruins, booed off the ice by the faithful at Madison Square Garden.
The old Bronx cheer, Drew.
The old Bronx cheer, the old baseball cheer for the hockey team. It's clear at this point that the Rangers are, barring something quite unforeseen, not going to make the playoffs. They have a number of very interesting pending unrestricted free agents. Rick Nash, Michael Grabner. They are the big name one UFAs. David Desharnais, certainly less of a big name, and Nick Holden on the back end. But it's clear that the Rangers are for sale, not the franchise, the players, as we approach the NHL trade deadline, Ezra. You know, it's a fascinating thing because Rick Nash is the biggest name of them all, but he's not the Rick Nash that everyone is used to seeing. He's certainly not the same player that he was when he was a staple of Canada's international teams, a staple of Team Canada's. But, you know, there's going to be a lot of people interested in both Rick Nash and Michael Grabner. Grabner, goal scorer with a lot of speed to kill, and he only costs, you know, a little over $1 million for the remainder of the year. I mean, prorated for the remainder of the year, whereas Nash has the big contract at closer to $7.5 million.
Yeah, and you know, it looks more and more likely that the Rangers are going to move all of these players. I'm not in the camp that believes that they're going to move Ryan McDonagh and Matt Zuccarello. I think if they do decide to move their captain and Matt Zuccarello, it's going to be prior to the draft or at the draft. I don't believe that. I realize Larry Brooks wrote about this a few weeks back that, you know, they might move Ryan McDonagh and Matt Zuccarello. But Drew, the big one for me.
So Zuccarello and McDonagh, free agents, UFA after next season.
Right. And so I guess, you know, the thinking is that they aren't going to give Ryan McDonagh the big money. But, you know, Drew, we know that Rick Nash and his agent submitted that 12-team trade list, the teams that he would be willing to accept a trade to. So we know that it's kind of a foregone conclusion that Nash is going to be traded. He's going to be a rental for a team. Mm-hmm. And so is Michael Grabner. And so you have to factor in, you know, a team's cap situation. And, you know, we talked about it during the first hour of the show. I mean, St. Louis, to me, makes a lot of sense compared to a team like Dallas. Mike Hyka just mentioned the Dallas Stars don't have a lot of cap room. So they really have to move a lot of cap space out.
Rangers have said, at least rumored, are that they'd be willing to hold on to some of Nash's cap hit to lessen the blow and maybe open up the number of teams that would be able to afford him.
Yep. So, I mean, that could obviously, you know, impact whether or not Dallas or a team that has cap problems can afford to trade for Rick Nash. But, you know, what's interesting to me is what is a team willing to give up? Not what the Rangers are asking, because we know what the Rangers are going to be asking for. They're going to be asking for a first-round pick. They're going to be asking for a prospect, and they're probably going to be asking for a second prospect and a second draft pick. Because Rick Nash right now, as far as I'm concerned, you know, you mentioned, Drew, that, you know, Rick Nash, he's a little older now. He's 33 years old. He's not the same player that he was, you know, back in 2012 when he came over to the New York Rangers in that big trade. But, you know, you watch the Rangers tonight and they got smoked by the Bruins, but Nash scored a beauty, stole the puck from Zdeno Chara, and you know, he still got 16 goals on the year. So, I mean, it's not like Rick Nash, you know, is a slouch at this point in his career. To me, it's also going to be interesting to see what does he get on his next contract, because I don't think anybody's going to be signing him to a 6 or 7 year deal. For me, it's most likely going to be a 2 or 4 year deal, but there's a good chance that the team that trades for him isn't going to sign him, and they're going to use him for a long playoff run. So, I mean, there are going to be plenty of teams that are going to be interested in his services. I mean, you wonder, is a team like the Vegas Golden Knights going to possibly go after Rick Nash with the cap space that they have in their first place in the Western Conference? Again, I think, you know, you could think of, you know, possibly, you know, 20 teams that could be interested in Rick Nash. Those are teams that are currently in a playoff spot, and those are teams that aren't currently in a playoff spot, Drew, because, you know, just because the trade deadline is, you know, 2.5 weeks from now, I think Rick Nash is going to be traded before that, by the way.
Well, I would agree with you.
I don't think they're going to wait till, you know, February 26th to trade him.
Well, you know, for team, if your team can acquire him 3 weeks earlier, they're more likely to pay a little bit more for him. Him and Michael Grabner are sort of grabbing the headlines out of New York. Here's what the guys, this is Bob McKenzie and I believe Pierre LeBrun, they had to say regarding the availability and the interest for Rick Nash and Michael Grabner.
So what is it going to take for a team to get Rick Nash?
As of this moment, to start, as was the case when Evander Kane first became as a rental available with the Buffalo Sabres, three pieces seem to be the asking price for Rick Nash from the New York Rangers: a first-round pick, a top prospect, and another lesser player or prospect or pick in combination with those. Now, the reality is a lot of general managers think these rental prices are way too high right now, and I would think that whether it's the Buffalo Sabres with Evander Kane or the New York Rangers with Rick Nash, that at the end of the day, the bottom line price for them is going to be the same as what Minnesota gave up for Martin Hanzel last year. That effectively was a first-round pick and a second-round pick, or you could equate it a first-round pick and a prospect. That seems to be the price.
One stumbling block as well, Bob, I think, in dealing Rick Nash is his cap hit, $7.8 million, which is gigantic. But if the Rangers haven't already done this, they will in the coming days and weeks, as tell teams they're willing to eat a pretty healthy portion of that cap hit in order to not only facilitate a deal, but obviously maximize as many young assets, Bob just listed them, that they can get in return in a Rick Nash deal. So that's going to be a message.
What about Michael Grabner being available with the New York Rangers? There's a guy who's also an unrestricted free agent. And Pierre, to your point, he only makes $1.6 million. Mm-hmm. And last year, 27 goals. This year, he's already got 21 goals. And the price for Grabner is expected to be more along the lines of a first-round pick. That's it. There are some general managers I've talked to that think he's a more cost-efficient return than Rick Nash might be. But the Rangers are now in full sell mode if they can. Nick Holden's a UFA defenseman who could be on the move by the deadline. And quite frankly, the word rebuild is finally being used with the Rangers. General manager Jeff Gorton is going to be listening on everybody. There are no untouchables on the New York Rangers. Not McDonough, not Zuccarello, not JT Miller, not anybody. That doesn't mean they're going to rush out everybody out the door, but they are going to listen. And if young players, prospects, and picks are coming in, they will consider it.
What about Michael Grabner? As we spent that majority of the segment talking about Rick Nash, how much interest do you think there's going to be in Michael Grabner? Certainly got speed to kill, yep. Doesn't cost a lot of money, and just for whatever reason seems to be undervalued everywhere he goes.
Yeah, another former Manitoba Moose.
Definitely.
Yeah, there's going to be interest in Michael Grabner, and I think there's going to be a lot of interest because he's not going to cost you a lot, right? Yeah. I mean, you're not going to have to give up a prospect, a roster player, and a first-round pick or a second-round pick to get Michael Grabner. It's probably going to be a one-for-one deal because, as we mentioned, he's most likely going to be a rental. I mean, he's not a young guy by any stretch of the imagination. I believe he's 32, 33 years old as well. So, you know, for me, you know, Grabner's an interesting one. And, you know, Bob McKenzie in that clip that we played, you know, he talks about the Rangers are finally, you know, admitting that this is a rebuild, and I think it's about time. And, you know, it's unfortunate for a guy like Henrik Lundqvist, mm-hmm. who, you know, who wants that elusive Stanley Cup.
He ain't getting it in
New
York.
And to me, that's the one guy that he doesn't mention that's untouchable. I mean, I don't see any circumstances where Henrik Lundqvist gets traded.
He's going to be like the Sedins. He's not going to win a Stanley Cup, but he's going to play his entire NHL career with one team, and that's the Rangers.
I think he's a Hall of Famer, by the way, Lundqvist.
Certainly got an interesting case. I mean, he's been one of the top five goaltenders in the league for a decade.
Greatest Swedish goalie of all time.
Well, yes, that I would agree with. That he's definitely the greatest Swedish goaltender of all time. He'll have an interesting case, but he's not going anywhere because he doesn't want to go anywhere.
And you know, Drew, we talked about, you know, the cap space.
Yeah.
And you know, for me, you know, you look at the Anaheim Ducks and his former teammate with the London Knights, Corey Perry. You know, you wonder if a team like the Ducks can make Rick Nash work. But, you know, when you're talking about a guy like Grabner, I mean, I think you could make a strong argument that, you know, he might fit in with the Jets on their third or fourth line. Again, speed. I don't think that the Jets need Rick Nash or Michael Grabner, because I think the Jets really are a great offensive team and a great team in general without making any moves.
Yeah.
I mean, their defense is good, solid in goal, enough goal scoring to go around. But you wonder, you know, if it only, you know, kind of takes a middling prospect and a second or third pick, maybe you go after a guy like Michael Grabner.
He's a Cy Young winner each and every year. I think this year, 21 goals, 5 assists, exactly that for the New York Rangers. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the Rangers and their free agents, or pardon me, their trade deadline with their guys who are pending free agents. The preceding segment was brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. When we come back, Paul Gackel of the San Jose Mercury News joins us to talk about the Sharks. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
25 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit Rumors Comedy Club. .com. This week at Rumors and next week, the Pride of Saskatchewan, Kelly Taylor, is going to be in town. If you haven't seen Kelly's performance, it's fantastic. A high energy comedian, if there ever was one, and a special Sunday evening show, Sunday night at 7:45. It's a dirty show, not a regular show for Kelly Taylor. He's going to be a little bit dirty on Sunday night. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the San Jose Mercury News and the Bay Area News Group newspapers, we're pleased to welcome to the program Paul Gackel. Paul, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, no problem. And you know what? I saw Dave Coulier at Rumors Comedy Club one time.
Yeah, well,
so
now
cut it out.
You've opened up a can of worms now, Paul, because
we played hockey with Dave Coulier.
We played hockey with Dave Coulier. When he,
are you serious?
When he first came to perform at Rumors, I had the opportunity going, this is going way back now.
It's like 15 years ago.
It's a long time ago. I picked him up at the airport, and he was only coming to town for 3 days, three or so, and he shows up at the airport, and he gets his luggage, and this is coming through customs at the old Winnipeg airport in the basement, and he's got this massive, you know, hockey duffel bag with him. And I said, Dave, you're only in town for a couple days. You know, why? What's with the bag? And he said, oh, you know, I brought my gear with me because I figured I'd get a game in while I'm here. I said, perfect. We have a game scheduled for tonight. We actually had a game. It was our buddy's birthday. And so that night, this is a Thursday night. God, this must be 19, maybe 2001, 2002.
I'm thinking 2001.
Yeah. And so he performed his set. And then we left right from the comedy club. We took him straight to the, I guess, what was known as the Highlander. And we played hockey. We had a Red Wings jersey for him and everything. We played hockey with Dave Coulier.
And he's a good hockey player.
That's amazing.
Yeah. He's a really good hockey player. Anyways,
did he say cut it out for you?
He said it on stage. He didn't say it on the ice, but he was a good guy. I mean, he really was. We have this photo. I mean, we all have a lot more hair and a lot fewer pounds on our bellies, but we have this photo of all of us playing hockey with Dave Coulier.
Yeah, Paul, I'll dig it up, and then I'll send it to you. I'll tweet it out.
I'm pretty sure it's on my Facebook page or yours, Ezzy. It's definitely available on the internet, that's for sure.
Well, now you've just got to play guitar with Uncle Jesse and yourself.
No, so life's goal is still to be achieved. Paul.
The Rippers.
Yeah. Paul obviously brought you on to talk about the San Jose Sharks as we sit here on the 7th of February. The Sharks, second place in the Pacific Division, but I would suggest it's probably not a comfortable second place as they are only 2 points behind, in front of the Calgary Flames and the Ducks and the Kings are still nipping at their heels. It seems like it's going to be quite the race for the final spots in the Pacific Division.
No doubt about it. I mean, very tight in there, and obviously the Sharks, you know, trying to find their identity now without Joe Thornton, and they actually put together a pretty good little road trip here. They went 2-2-1 in five games, but I don't think their record really reflects how well the team, you know, played without Big Jumbo Joe, because they basically gave a game away in Pittsburgh, in which they produced 42 shots on goal. Brent Burns, a giveaway at the, you know, the last 10 seconds of the period, where he put it right on the tape of a stick, led to a, you know, wide open shot in the slot. And then Martin Jones coughed one up in similar fashion in the third period. And then last night in Denver, you know, they outshot the Avs 39-19, I believe it was, and couldn't solve Jonathan Bernier. So overall, they had a really nice road trip. But, you know, it's one thing to go without a key player like that for five games, and then, you know, we don't really know how long that's going to be. You know, there's, you know, you don't know if Thornton's going to be back this year. So it could be a long haul, and you just hope there aren't any more injuries on top of that.
Paul, you just mentioned Brent Burns, and, you know, his early season struggles were well documented. I think it took him about 25 games to get his first goal of the season. He's up to 9 goals on the season now, but does he just look like a player that has regained his confidence?
You know what? I was never really all that concerned, to tell you the truth, when Brent Burns wasn't finding the net there early in the season. I really thought it was just a matter of puck luck and a bit of an anomaly, because I had looked at it at one point, I want to say about 18 or 19 games. I actually looked at the numbers, and at that point he was at the exact same number of shots on goal that he had had the previous season. So it was a situation where, you know, the puck just wasn't finding the net. And you see a goal like he had in Carolina the other day. You know, he races back to the blue line, retrieves the puck, and then just sort of turns around without even looking and slaps one toward the net. Barkley Goodrow's standing there as a screen, and it goes into the top right corner. He just wasn't getting those breaks early in the season. So I haven't really seen a huge difference in his play, to tell you the truth. I think it was just a situation where the volume of shots were there. He was still, you know, the centerpiece of their offense. But when you're a defenseman and when you're shooting from, you know, 50 feet out, you know, a lot of times you're depending on, you know, deflections, redirections, screens, and all that type of stuff. And those type of goals are going to ebb and flow over the course of a season. And, you know, I was telling people, you know, last year you look at where he was at, 29 goals. You know, that's kind of a career year. I think Mike Green's the only guy since Coffey in, 87-88 that's been able to score 30 goals. So to get 29, you know, that's not going to happen every year. But you look where Burns will probably finish up, you know, maybe 15, 16. You know, that's a decent number.
Paul Gackle is our guest on NHL This Week. Paul covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. You know, Paul, you take Joe Thornton out of the lineup, and obviously it's going to be more impactful on the assist side of things, on the playmaking side of things, than it is going to be on the goal scored side of things, as Joe is known more as a playmaker. But for the San Jose Sharks team, that isn't what I would describe as offensively dynamic. Maybe aside from Logan Couture, he's their best goal scorer on the roster. Who's going to pick up the slack for Joe Thornton's offense being out of the lineup?
Well, you know, the thing is, they're kind of getting it done by committee. And I would actually, I think, argue a little bit with the Thornton goals, because surprisingly, he actually had, I think, 12 when he went down with the injury.
13 so far this year.
Joe was actually shooting a lot more this year. And, he says, you know, it's just the way it is. But I don't wonder if there was a realization that, like, hey, you know, if I don't shoot the puck, it kind of makes everything a lot easier for the defense. And I wonder if there wasn't a message that came home from the coaching staff, because we've saw Joe shoot the puck this year more than ever. But, you know, I know what you mean, and I agree with you in general. But the good thing for the Sharks this year offensively is they're kind of getting things done by committee. They have 7 scorers in double digits right now, and only the Jets and the Rangers actually have more goal scorers in double digits at this point in the season. So they are getting – you know, a lot of guys stepping up this year. Tomas Hertl's having a bigger year. Chris Tierney's in there with 13 goals. He's really taken a giant leap forward. He was a guy that really got called out by Pete DeBoer at the end of the season last year on Clean the Locker Day out, and only got a one-year contract in restricted free agency. And he's really come on and emerged and has been, you know, a strong asset there on the third line. Jonas Donskoy's in there with double digits. He's starting to look like the guy that we saw in that run to the Stanley Cup final a couple of years ago. And then they've had a couple kids emerge in Timo Meier and Kevin LeBanc. And Meier, really a slow start. This was a guy that was part of that great 2015 draft class, and he was taken ninth right in between Zach Werenski and Mikko Rantanen. And early in the season, I believe it was only a goal through his first 16 games, and he served as a healthy scratch at Madison Square Garden in October. But come December 1st, he actually leads the Sharks in scoring. And, you know, that team had really had a tough time finding that left wing for the Thornton-Pavelski line. And he sort of closed that revolving door. So I do think that they have, you know, they're not, like you say, they're not a team that's going to blow you out of the water. Their identity is their defensive foundation. They need to have good goaltending. But I do think that they have enough, you know, depth on those three lines where they can get by without Thornton. And so far, the power plays still look pretty good and pretty dangerous without Jumbo Joe as well. Kevin LeBanc, he led the Ontario Hockey League in scoring a couple years ago. And, you know, as a guy that has a really hard shot, our minor league coach, Roy Sommer, said he has the hardest shot, and hardest, most accurate shot of anyone he's ever coached, including Joe Pavelski and you know, Logan Couture, those guys that have come through the Shark system. So he's a guy with a lot of skill and a lot of talent. He stepped onto that first power play unit there with Couture and Burns and Hertl and Pavelski, and they really haven't skipped a beat. Got three or four goals in this road trip. So far, so good. There's no doubt that, you know, you take a Joe Thornton off the ice, he creates space for his teammates, one of the greatest passers of the generation. But, you know, you guys see here up in Winnipeg, you know, the team's lost Shifley and now Trouba. And when you have some depth, you can absorb that over the long haul.
Paul, I thought you had a really interesting article a couple of days ago in the San Jose Mercury News writing about Logan Couture and his disappointment with not being able to represent or at least have the opportunity to represent Team Canada at the 2018 Winter Olympics in South Korea. And as you know, Mark Edward Vlasic has voiced his displeasure with not being able to represent Team Canada at the Winter Olympics. Brent Burns is another guy that's represented Canada at the Olympics before. When you talk about, you know, Logan Couture and Mark Edward Vlasic and Brent Burns, are you surprised that even though the Winter Olympics are now underway in South Korea, these players, you can still tell that they're pretty ticked off that they're not going to be able to represent their country?
Yeah, well, Logan Couture kind of walked a fine line. I think that he kind of wanted to make it pretty clear that, you know, his number one goal is to win the Stanley Cup and to do it with the Sharks. And you know, so he didn't want to cry too loud, but, you know, it was hard for him to not acknowledge some disappointment, especially because when you're talking about a guy like him, you know, he barely missed the Sochi team in 2014, and he was 24 at the time. So you look at it, and it lines up perfectly where, you know, this is going to be the year that he would go. And, you know, everything's really fallen into place for him. He had that great run in the playoffs a couple years ago where he scored, you know, 30 points in 24 games. And then he gets invited onto the World Cup team and has a pretty good chemistry almost immediately there with Jonathan Toews. And now he's really riding the bus for the San Jose Sharks. He's at 22 goals, and, you know, it's not like his stats are going to really jump off the page. But if you consider the type of system he's playing in and the role that he's asked to play, where he takes on the Crosbys and the Tavareses and the top centers on a nightly basis, you know, if you watch this guy play night in, night out like I do, he's so well-rounded. He's such a smart hockey player. You know, he would really deserve to be on that team. But is he the type of guy where, you know, next time around when he's 32, you know, is he really going to be in the mix? Because you have all these guys, like the McKinnon's going to be there, and, you know, Stamkos will probably still get his shot, and you know, McDavid will be there, and you have young guys like Scheifele and all these guys coming up, you would have to think that really Couture's window is going to be closed by, for a guy like what he does, he kind of needs to be there in his late 20s. So disappointing for him. Mark Edward Vlasic, I mean, has been very vocal, obviously, and, you know, even to the point where his lawyers had to kind of get it, you know, he was thinking about just going over there anyways, and his lawyers kind of said, basically, don't do that because your contract could be voided, and you could actually be arrested by the San Jose Sharks for doing that. So Mark Edward Vlasic had been very vocal, and, you know, to him, it's all about, he said this to me the other day, it's all about money, you know. At the end of the day, they're going to probably go back to China because they want to get their foot in that Chinese market. But this time around, the owners, you know, they look at South Korea and the game's going to be played in the middle of the night, and they don't see it being to their benefit. But it means so much to the players. He thought that was a really important thing, you know, for the owners to give the players that, and it's just going to make things tougher the next time the lockout comes around.
Yeah, Paul, sorry I misspoke. Brent Burns actually didn't represent Canada in Sochi.
He was at the World Cup.
He was at the World Cup. Yeah. That's what I meant to say, along with Joe Thornton. But he would have been a strong candidate for Canada at the 2018 Winter Olympics if the NHL was participating. But needless to say, there were a lot of Sharks that could have factored into the Olympics, including Joe Pavelski with Team USA.
No doubt, Joe Pavelski with Team USA. I would think Tomáš Hertl would be there for the Czech Republic. Mm-hmm. Jonas Donskoy probably with Finland. So, yeah, you're right. There's quite a few guys on the Sharks. And, you know, heck, even, you know, I'm probably not right here, but
you're going to say Martin Jones.
I wonder if Martin Jones would kind of be in the outside conversation as a third-string goalie.
Yeah, he's certainly been a driving force for the San Jose Sharks, a backstop that not a lot of people talk about since he came over from the L.A. Kings via the Boston Bruins a few years ago and really solidified that goaltending for the Sharks. Paul Gackel covered...
Yeah, he was incredible during that run to the playoffs. So,
yes.
You know. That year, yeah.
Absolutely. Paul Gackel covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News.
Cut it out, Paul.
Paul, appreciate your time this evening.
Have mercy.
There you go. More Full House quotes coming up next. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care. You're listening to NHL This Week. We got one final segment for you coming up next here on TSN 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
One final segment Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290. You're listening to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. James DeRoschuk doing a great job producing the program. Reminder, Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show will get you started at 9 a.m. here on TSN 1290. We'll look back at Friday night's Jets-Blues game and get you prepared for Sunday afternoon's Jets-Rangers game. As the homestand continues, the Jets a 3-0-1 mark through the first four games on this relatively unheard of 10-game homestand throughout the month of February.
I don't think you're ever going to see a 10-game homestand again for the Jets.
I still find it bizarre that it ever got scheduled. Like, when have you I mean, the most you've ever seen, I mean, maybe 7 games would be considered a very long homestand. A 10-game homestand is unheard of, in my humble opinion. But here we are. And the Jets are 4 games into the 10-game homestand.
The Jets aren't going to complain about it.
No, certainly not, with another 6 games to come. Out-of-town scoreboard, we mentioned earlier tonight in Madison Square Garden, the Boston Bruins 6-1 winners over the New York Rangers. Goal scorers for the Bruins, Riley Nash, not Rick, Riley, although Rick did score for the Rangers. He scored their only goal. Riley Nash, Zdeno Chara, Patrice Bergeron, Tim Schaller, Patrice Bergeron again, Sean Corrali. 6-1 Bruins over the Rangers as the Rangers got booed off the ice. Game which had significant interest for Winnipeg Jets fans in Toronto. It was the Maple Leafs blowing a 2-0 lead, but they still win over the Predators 3-2 in a shootout that went 7 rounds.
Kasperi Kapanen looking really good for the Leafs right now.
Kasperi Kapanen doing everything, pretty much kicking in the door and saying, I'm going to be an NHL player. You're not going to send me back to the Marlies. The Leafs getting the 2 points. The Predators getting the 1 point. which means they're now going to be sitting 1 point behind the Winnipeg Jets in the Central Division standings. Now the Predators only with two games in hand on the Jets. They made up one of those games tonight, and then they'll be back to, you know, playing, matching each other. I think the Predators next play tomorrow night, and the Jets play on Friday, of course, and it'll be the Jets having two games in hand on the Predators going forward for the next little while. And the last game on the NHL docket tonight in Los Angeles, it's the Oilers 2 and the Kings 2. The Kings jump out to a 2-0 lead. They need this game, LA. They're battling to get back into a playoff position in the Western Conference, in the Pacific Division. A big game for the Kings if they're able to get the win on home ice against the Oilers. With a victory, the Kings would leapfrog the Calgary Flames into third place in the Pacific Division, dropping the Flames out of a playoff spot. So it's going to be very topsy-turvy in the Pacific Division going forward. That's why we had Paul on to talk about the San Jose Sharks, who are in the midst of that dogfight there.
Do we have time for the Bill Peters stuff?
No, we don't have time for the Bill Peters stuff. We'll save it for Saturday's Legal Curve Hockey Show. I think that's it for this Wednesday edition of NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guests, Paul Gackle, the San Jose Mercury News, Mike Heike of the Dallas Morning News, and Luke Korak, St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download via tsn1290.ca, via our website, illegalcurve.com, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and get it sent to your device each and every week. Like I said, big props to producer James doing a great job on the board. For Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Until Saturday morning at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.